Coming up on TERP Weekly Edition, crime in College Park and what authorities are going to do to keep you safe.
Campus colleges are feeling the strain of budget shortfalls.
Our latest flu update takes us into a campus gym lockdown.
And Halloween is just around the corner. Are you ready? TERP Weekly Edition starts now.
This is TERP Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. TERP Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Welcome to TERP Weekly Edition. I'm Matt Moderno.
And I'm Jennifer Memelo. Three separate shootings in as many days in and around College Park have put students who regularly visit shops and restaurants on Route 1 on guard. TERP Weekly Edition's Michael O'Neill is on the crime watch, where he asked one campus security official whether everything possible is being done to keep the campus community out of harm's way.
Although crime on campus is seeing a dramatic decrease, three shootings last week in and around College Park left three wounded and one dead, making sophomore Lauren Giraldi more cautious.
Feels like you're unsafe. It's supposed to be a college campus, and it's supposed to be somewhere you feel safe and secure. But I live right near there and go there sometimes by myself, and now I think twice about that.
University and county police maintain they took the necessary precautions to ensure the campus remains safe in the aftermath of the shootings. The first shooting involved an off-duty officer who spotted two men dressed as women shoplifting at the Rugged Warehouse. As the officer confronted the two individuals at their car, a part of the officer got stuck inside the car while the two thieves started to drive away. The officer, Private First Class Aaron Hill, feared for his life and opened fire, wounding both individuals. The second shooting involved a man who barricaded himself inside the 7-Eleven convenience store on Knox Road. As the man came out of the store, he lunged at an officer with a knife. Six officers on the scene opened fire on the man, who died a short time later. And yet a third shooting in nearby Beltsville inside an apartment complex left the area and police all it could handle. Despite the initial mayhem that sent scores of police cruisers and detectives to the scenes of the shootings, University of Maryland police believe they kept the student bodies safe and away from crime scenes, according to police major Jay Gruber.
The shootings themselves were very isolated incidents. They didn't involve students. They involved nothing of a university nature. They could have taken place anywhere, but they happened to have taken place in College Park. They were very isolated, very, very quickly resolved incidents.
Gruber said incidents that occur off campus are harder to control because university police do not have the same security capabilities it has on campus, such as surveillance cameras. But Gruber still believes the incidents were taken care of smoothly and swiftly. Some students signed up for crime text alerts complained of not receiving one, or expressed disappointment at not being informed of a shooting in their text message. But Gruber said the system was not activated in its entirety and is only fully activated in special cases where students are ordered to do something to protect themselves. If students receive too many unnecessary messages, they may want to cancel their text alerts, something Gruber does not want to happen.
We don't want to get a lot of BS type of messages on here. And I don't want to give the students the opportunity to say, I'm sick and tired of getting these messages from the university police. I'm opting out of the system. We don't want that. We want this to be a system where when you see something on there, you need to do something.
Cell biology and genetics major Simon Lee feels more safe and secure receiving email crime alerts and seeing a heavy police presence.
I do get those email reports, those police alerts. Every time I get that, I always feel like they're doing something out there. And I always see cops on Route 1 anyway, so I feel like they're doing a good job trying to look out for students.
In College Park, I'm Michael O'Neill for TERP Weekly Edition.
October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and members of the Maryland community are finding a way to keep the campus beautiful and show their support for victims of abuse. TERP Weekly Edition's Kara Crawford has more.
The bright yellow daffodils that bloom outside of the University Health Center are a well-known sign of spring, but few are aware that they represent much more than a change of seasons. The flowers are planted in the Survivor Garden, which honors the survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. The bulbs, which are donated by the University Building and Landscape Services, are planted each October for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. They bloom in the spring, symbolizing the beauty of survivors of abuse. The Survivor Garden is sponsored by on-campus group SARP, or Sexual Assault Response and Prevention Programs. Senior SARP educator and family science major, Sonia Cindy, shared the mission behind the Survivor Garden event.
but to be able to talk and speak about their experiences in a healthy manner and know that it is okay to talk. Some people are just afraid that what might happen to them if they just talk because it's somebody that they know, or people are just very afraid of talking about their feelings on campus. And so we're just trying to give them as many resources as we can.
The annual bulb planting draws a large crowd from the Maryland community each year. SARP peer educator Caitlin Murphy shed light on what makes the event a huge success.
I think it's a really great way for people on campus to show their own involvement with sexual assault and domestic violence, and it's a really nice way to link the two events together.
Domestic Violence Awareness Month is recognized nationwide, and Murphy shared why it is so important that the university acknowledges its community members who are victims of domestic abuse.
It's something that people don't usually talk about. It's really easy to just say it doesn't happen, and things that you don't really see, you just can kind of forget about. So creating something that's really safe and comforting, but also allows people to create dialogue, like Survivor Garden, is a good way for the University of Maryland community to recognize that sexual assault is something that happens on a domestic violence, or dating violence is something that happens, you know, in all communities, not just in college. So it's a really good way to start a dialogue through which we can hopefully help solve the problem.
500 bulbs were added to the Survivor Garden by survivors of domestic violence, their family and friends, and students showing their support. Three Maryland seniors and first-time participants shared what motivated them to contribute to the garden.
Domestic violence is something that shouldn't be taken lightly, and I think it's important that people are aware of it and somehow know about it on campus.
Because it just shows that Maryland really supports these victims and that we think that it's wrong, that sexual abuse is wrong, and that we support the victims.
As part of something to commemorate these survivors and to bring beauty to the campus.
In College Park, I'm Kara Crawford for TERP Weekly Edition.
On October 15th, the University of Maryland was declared the victor in a nationwide challenge, and TERP Weekly Edition's Allie Prout reports that going green also means getting green.
Since entering the competition last April, Maryland has edged out over 470 schools nationwide to claim the title of America's Greenest Campus and won a prize of $5,000 to put towards sustainability efforts. Climate Culture sponsored the contest in an effort to promote energy efficiency. The website is an interactive tool that allows people to measure and reduce their carbon footprint. And 2,257 Maryland students are doing just that, earning Maryland its spot at the top. And students campus-wide agree that a greener TERP is a greater TERP.
I'm glad Maryland is doing something good for the environment.
We're very green. We're a national arboretum, and we signed the President's Climate Commitment in 2007, and I think we have a lot of initiatives to recycle and just overall be a very green campus.
I recycle, and I turn the lights off, not in my apartment.
Last year when I ate in the dining hall, there was the whole eat-in initiative so that you couldn't have takeout. There are recycling bins in my apartment. I think it's important to take part in those initiatives and going green and be more informed about the environment.
Junior broadcast major Laura Betts says she registered for the contest, but not because she thinks Maryland deserves the title.
I voted because my sociology professor told us to.
I don't think that we're that great of a campus, honestly. I mean, we make our initiatives and we do our work, but I don't feel like, compared to other schools that are very green, we're not. A lot of it has to do with just how big our campus is. I mean, if you have the greenest campus, it's going to be a small campus with private amenities that's going to be able to recycle a lot of other things.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Just last week, in the wake of Maryland's victory, T. Boone Pickens spoke to students at Stamp Student Union about his own green initiatives and says that without drastic action nationwide, those who are students now will suffer later.
I can get to the finish line at my age with my standard of living remaining the same. But you can't. You can't get to the finish line. You're going to have to come to grips with the problem. All of you are.
Pickens is a geologist who has worked in the energy business for more than 50 years. His self-titled Pickens Plan promotes the use of wind energy, natural gas, and an end to what he calls America's addiction to foreign oil. But Pickens also has suggestions for students looking for a more local approach to energy efficiency.
I need you to sign up with me on pickensplan.com. It doesn't cost you anything. And I will be in touch with you weekly and I'll be asking you to do things. What will I ask you to do as we're getting ready to vote on these bills that we've got? I'm going to ask you to get emails in to your representatives. I had one congressman say to me, he said, look, I've signed up. I am for the Pickens plan. Tell them to stop. I got 34,000 emails from you all. And he said in the last 3 days.
In College Park, I'm Allie Prout for Terp Weekly Edition.
Dine in or take out? The owner of the Varsity Grill wants to give his customers the option. He applied for a license to open a liquor store within the bar. It would have included a drive-through window so patrons could buy their liquor without ever even getting out of the car. But council members didn't like the drive-through idea and asked the grill owner to drop the feature from his plan. The owner decided it wasn't worth it and he's withdrawn the application. Council members are concerned about the number of liquor stores along Route 1, and for now at least, that number won't change.
Up next, campus colleges are feeling the strain of budget shortfalls. You're listening to TERP Weekly Edition. University funding is forcing some classes to be cut short.
In Riverdale, about 6 miles from University of Maryland's sprawling campus, there's a small brick building with colorful murals on the walls. Murals hand-painted by children. This building houses the Engage University, a learning lab where UMD students and the community can go to a bicycle repair shop, learn about clean energy at a biodiesel fueling station, and cultivate in an outdoor community garden. This summer, UMD administrators have debated the future of the Engage University due to financial cutbacks. This week, the Engage University was officially cut from the University of Maryland's budget, meaning it would no longer receive funding from the university. Margaret Morgan Hubbard, the director of the Engage University, says UMD money was critical, especially to fund the salaries of the Engage University staff.
We cost about $200,000, maybe a little more, depending on what staff you add, what staff you don't add. But we need to be sustained by that kind of money. We can raise $10,000 here, $20,000 there, $15,000 there, but we can't raise substantial salaries.
But more than money, Hubbard feels the loss of university funding will threaten the Engage University's connection with the UMD students.
We live in a university building. That's a tremendous asset. Our farm is on university. It's part of the building. It's part of the land. We can't pick up and move it. We have tremendous partnerships with students and so on, and we want to build on those. There has to be some strong university connection.
Despite the budget cut, there's one program at the Engage University that may still have a chance to survive. And that's the Engage University's community garden, Masterpiece Farm.
We got more Swiss chard, tomatoes, raspberries, peppers.
Rows of vegetables and flowers on the 23 garden plots in Masterpiece Farm. At Masterpiece, both adults and children in the community can learn to garden organically. The staff also uses the plots to grow food to sell to the local middle school and farmers market.
It's a real shame.
That's Curtis Blake, senior environmental policy major and Masterpiece Garden intern.
What I can gather from it is the school didn't want to do it. You know, of course, you know, University of Maryland doesn't want to see Engage University go. Unfortunately, the program was not able to be sustainable and to sustain itself. So the budget got cut.
He motions toward a row of thriving tomato plants, just one of many vegetables and plants in the garden.
That's a lot of fried green tomatoes.
Yeah, they ain't getting old. They not getting red. So.
It's funny to see a batch of tomatoes where the two oddballs are the red ones. You know?
They probably the only ones getting red, too.
Yeah. Right. Have fun with those, man. The sad thing is, you know, is unfortunately EU wasn't able to be self-sufficient, but the fact of the matter is the garden is. You know, the garden is a perfect example, a perfect paradigm of how to show that you can have an urban organic farm that is self-sustaining, that's able to grow amazing food and can really give something back to the community, you know? Like, this is a really important time for stuff like this. And I think that's really why we're going to be successful at it.
The loss of the Engage University does worry the Masterpiece staff, but they're still hopeful about the future of Masterpiece Garden.
Like in this like little space here, earlier in the spring, I put 5 potato plants, and I harvested over 11.5 pounds of potatoes.
Jennifer Fairfax, head of Masterpiece Farms Garden and Nutrition Programs, is one of those staff members.
The Engage University, the staff, yes. Because they're my coworkers, so, and I care about them, and they do a great job, and I hate to see them leave. The community garden or the farm itself, I'm less worried about because there's so much support from the, you know, literally just tons of support, and I don't think that the farm itself is really threatened, is in danger of closing.
That's arugula, dog.
Oh, it's the.
Curtis thinks the university budget cut may in fact be a step in the right direction for Masterpiece Garden.
If you're really to get into the dirty and gritty, I believe that us losing our funding from the school actually kind of put a fire under our butts, and now we're going to try to seek to be sustainable ourselves, not receive university funding. And hopefully, when the university does have the money again to put into Engage University, to put into Masterpiece, of course we'll welcome it with open arms. But for right now, we've received funding from outside sources. We're funding ourselves with the amazing produce that we sell to the community to make people eat better, feel happier. And that's certainly a good thing that is not going to be leaving the Riverdale or certainly the Prince George's County area.
One fact is clear. The budget cuts do not mean the end for Masterpiece Garden. Farm coordinator Vinny Benevino agrees.
Yeah, we're here to stay. We're not walking away from this space. The university may walk away from this space, but we can't. We are committed to this farm. We're committed to this neighborhood and this community. We're committed to the mission of growing food here in the city. Are in the Beltway. We're really excited about this, and we are going to focus on our successes, and we have enough support to continue on.
From Riverdale, this is Shauna Stewart for Dirt Weekly Edition.
To learn more about the Engage University and Masterpiece Garden, go to www.engagedu.umd.edu. This week, Allie Prout spoke to students about their efforts to stop the BS in BSOS.
Shira Silver wants you to dig for fossils at her stand. And if you wouldn't mind signing her petition, you might be able to help more than 5,600 behavioral and social science students get a better education.
We're having a stand to educate people about the funding discrepancies between BSOS and the other colleges. BSOS has the most students, more students than any other college, but we don't have the most funding. And that's because the current funding rates are based on how many students there were 10 years ago, and our enrollment's more than doubled, but our tuition hasn't gone up the same amount.
Last semester, BSOS majors contributed almost $60 million in tuition. But the college, home to 4 of the 5 largest majors in the university, operates on just over half of that sum. Fed up with the college's failure in funding, more than 500 students staged a protest last April on McKeldin Mall. And they didn't walk away from their walkout empty-handed.
There was something called the reallocation process where each school gave a little bit of money in and the provost gave a little bit out. So we got an extra $500,000 than we had given in.
But Shira, who is head of the BSOS Equal Education Committee, says that this semester's BSOS stands, spread throughout the campus, are a reminder that the administration isn't finished yet.
As a result of the walkout, we did get a little bit of additional funding, but we need about 10 years of that to close the gap. So we're definitely working on it. We're definitely appreciative of the administration and what they've done so far, but we just want to remind them that they're definitely not done and they still need to be thinking of us.
Joe Konigsberg says the stands have generated a few hundred petition signatures so far, but he hopes to get to 20,000 signatures, representing the entire undergrad population.
Every undergrad needs to sign this. A lot of these classes, because of the lack of funding, are for major only, or they fill up so quickly and the classes are so big that like a lot of people can't get to know teachers on a personal basis, or the classes are just too big for them to care, and it really takes away from the ability to enjoy class.
Petition signee Azi Sani agrees.
I think that's crazy. I think all colleges and departments of the university deserve equally proportional funding, just because, you know, it promotes diversity and allows people to pursue their academic pursuits.
So until funding increases, BSOS students have a message for Maryland's administration.
Stop the
BS with BSOS!
On McKeldin Mall, I'm Allie Prout for Terp Weekly Edition.
This year marks the 40th anniversary of the University of Maryland's African American Studies Department. Founded in 1969, the program initially had 27 courses that included public policy in the black community, politics in South Africa, courses in African culture, and a Swahili language course. Since the 1960s, the African American Studies Department has more than doubled its curriculum, adding more courses on contemporary issues and public policy. In the future, the department hopes to add both a master's PhD program.
Too many student renters and an excessive amount of noise were hot topics of debate in forums for city council candidates. Residents voiced clear frustrations over loud parties and overcrowded, poorly maintained properties recently during a discussion in Berwyn Heights and another meeting held in College Park Woods. City council candidates vowed to create a stricter code noise enforcement and better student involvement. But many residents complained student renters were not to blame for what is at heart of the housing issue. Rather, they claim landlords are to blame for allowing too many student rentals. Still, others placed the blame on the city for making rental houses in College Park too desirable and affordable for students. One mayoral candidate, Andy Fellows, addressed one of the gatherings. He doesn't oppose student rentals, but he's concerned about the impact on the housing market. He says, "It will destroy single-family home ownership. What does remain an issue for university students is finding affordable off-campus housing, since on-campus housing remains scarce for much of the student population."
Up next, an update on campus efforts to protect you from the flu. You're listening to Terp Weekly Edition.
Welcome back to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Matt Moderna.
And I'm Jennifer Memelo. The threat of a swine flu pandemic has the Eppley Recreation Center breaking a sweat. I visited the popular campus gym to find out what they're doing to keep the pig flu at bay.
The Eppley Recreation Center's greatest foe this fall isn't fat, it's flu. Swine flu. Packed tightly together in the basement between shelves filled with sports club equipment and extra cotton towels, you'll find hand sanitizers and antibacterial wipes lining the walls of Cage 64. This stockpile reveals the gym's weapons of choice when it comes to combating the spread of the dreaded sickness. Kim Eckert, the North Campus Facilities Manager, revealed the codes of cleanliness for the popular gym.
Just some of the things we've done in terms of patrons. Would be the hand sanitizers that we just recently, probably about a month ago, installed on the walls. And we did that here in the ERC as well as all the other CR spaces, so including SPH. We've done that. We have the equipment wipes that we have, and we've had those for a while, but we definitely keep those in stock. Don't let those deplete because they're used a lot more now that we've had this scare.
But the problem isn't always with patrons. The gym is also home to over 150 student employees whose list of responsibilities gets a little longer every time a scare like this breaks out.
We believe here that in order to be able to support the kind of programs that we support, we need a healthy staff as well. So recently we've done things like, buy Purell for all the staff desks here at the ERC and all the other CRS facilities. And pretty much just kind of working with our tenants. Dining services is big. They're downstairs. They're one of our tenants. Sneakers. Just working with them to put more detail into their procedures and working on frequency. You know, little things like keeping their fruit covered, daily, day-to-day cleaning, nightly cleaning, and just keeping up with those areas as well.
And in case you aren't convinced, this isn't the gym's first encounter with a possible pandemic.
We actually talked a little bit about this when there was the MRSA scare. And so we did a lot then as well to put emphasis on some of our cleaning procedures. But when that all came to fruition. We actually, at that point, had the wipes, and, you know, we didn't discontinue those because that scare kind of died out. I don't want to say it necessarily died out. It's still here, but it was really pretty hype there in the news for a while and throughout the university.
Despite the fact that the Diamondback reported a drop in the number of swine flu cases on campus, most student employees at the ERC are still a bit wary of the flu and how their patrons are handling it.
Well, if somebody did have it, I feel like I could catch it so easily and I wouldn't know until I was really sick or something.
Do the hand sanitizers and stuff make you feel better about not catching it?
I mean, to an extent, yeah, because I could not catch it from, like, durable surfaces, but it's not going to stop somebody from, like, coughing on me or from just passing from person to person.
I'm not really afraid of getting swine flu here at the gym just because I feel like you're just as prone to getting it anywhere else, and it just doesn't really scare me.
I'm definitely scared of getting swine flu at the gym. I know that a lot of employees have already gotten it, and it's kind of weird because students must be scared because they're using the machine wipes to wipe themselves, which definitely isn't a good option.
For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Jennifer Memelow.
Economic hard times deliver another blow to the university's athletic department. According to the Washington Times, the school sold nearly 800 fewer season tickets for men's basketball this year than it did last season. As a result, a decision's been made to sell season tickets to the general public for the first time in 15 years. Last season, attendance at the men's games averaged 17,048, but that's more than 900 seats below the Comcast Center's capacity, and it's the lowest since the building opened in 2002-2003. The Terps are ranked in some preseason polls, and if their season meets those high expectations, it may not be hard to fill those remaining seats after all.
There's something new on shuttle UM buses running to and from the universities at Shady Grove. According to a report in the Diamondback, passengers on that route now have Wi-Fi available, a useful feature for a trip that can, at times, take more than an hour. A DOT spokesperson had no information on the cost of the new service, and it's being funded by the university at Shady Grove. There's also no word on plans to introduce Wi-Fi on any of the other shuttle routes.
Ghostly tales of haunted Maryland? Sounds about right at this time of year. Terp Weekly Edition's Matt Butner got up his courage and went out to explore.
Halloween is here, and in the spirit of the season, it's always fun to tell ghost stories or watch a scary movie in the dark. What some people may not know is that the University of Maryland has some of its very own ghost stories. University archivist Ann Turcos happily shares the information with those who ask.
Halloween is a very popular time for people to come and ask us in the archives about our ghost tales.
There are more than a few ghost stories surrounding the university, and some say several buildings are haunted. It's claimed that paranormal activity has been observed at the Rossboro Inn, Morrill Hall, Marymount Hall, several fraternity and sorority houses, and even in dorms like Easton Hall. Turcos gives an example of the types of paranormal activity reported.
We start off at the Rossboro Inn, which is probably one of the most haunted places on campus. There's a ghost there named Miss Betty, who has appeared to at least two people in a yellow dress, a long yellow dress. And we believe that Miss Betty was the manager of the Rossboro Inn during the Civil War. There have also been instances where a vase of flowers has appeared overnight when no one else was in the building. There have been footsteps on the second floor of the building when they know no one else is in there. Windows have opened mysteriously on their own, so it's a place that has a lot of legends.
Similar stories and occurrences have been reported around the other mentioned buildings. Keeping records of ghostly activity is one thing, but the archivist may have more than a historical reason to be interested in the subject.
I personally have had a ghostly experience on this campus, a ghost that was of someone very close to me who worked here at the university. So I think there's a good chance there probably is some reality to it.
The experience didn't leave her the same.
Until I had that one personal experience, I wasn't really sure about all that, but I'm very positive that they do this. It was kind of scary at the time, but on the other hand, it was very comforting to know that that person was very close by.
Turcos isn't alone. Senior Brendan Hollerin shares what he thinks about the subject.
I've heard some pretty convincing stories from friends of mine. I just, in my experience, I just think that, you know, there are certain things that can't be explained.
Senior Stephanie Schnick had her own experience with what may have been a ghost.
When I was laying in bed, I, like, was completely awake, and I thought someone said hi to me. Like, that kind of stuff, like, I'm like, that was weird.
Junior bio major Shane Medella isn't as open to the idea of ghosts.
Nah, I don't believe in ghosts. I probably did when I was a little kid, but I guess as you get older and you're exposed to the environment more, you're not satisfied by any of the evidence that there's ghosts around. It doesn't seem logical.
He will celebrate the social side of the holiday with a costume party.
It's going to be a Halloween party, costumes, everything. Probably some beers, playing beer pong, jungle juice. Just people having fun, relaxing.
The university has many upcoming events centered around Halloween. To name a few, Hoff Theater will be showing horror films like Psycho and A Nightmare on Elm Street. The SGA is featuring their third annual Haunted House in the Grand Ballroom Lounge at the Stamp Student Union on the night of the 28th, and there will be a concert featuring the Matt and Kim Band in the Grand Ballroom on the 30th. So whether you gear up for a ghost hunt, plan to have fun with friends, or enjoy campus activities, this year's Halloween will have a lot to offer students. Reporting from a possibly haunted college park, for Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Matt Butner.
That's all for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Jennifer Memelo.
And I'm Matt Moderno. We'll be back next week for more news from in and around College Park. And don't forget, you can take us with you. Find our podcast at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.